Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Patricia Jurjevich, Regional Program Administrator of Region 6 Behavioral Healthcare. Her topic will be History, Purpose, Structure, and Recent Developments in the Publicly Funded Behavioral Health System in Region 6. Ms. Jurjevich's talk was given as part two of the Behavioral Health Advocacy and the Importance of Public-Private Partnership speaker series, which is presented by the Bellevue University Graduate Clinical Counseling Programs. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, October 1st, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Bellevue University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Nebraska District 45 State Senator Abby Cornett.
Patty is the Director of Region 6 Administrative Services and has been with Region 6 in a variety of different jobs since 1997. She is currently responsible for the organization's public relations, marketing and community planning, strategic and operational policy and leadership. She works with to set the values and mission statement for Region 6. She helps develop the budget, and that's a difficult thing because every year the appropriations change and the legislature enacts new policies or new statutes, and you have to formulate that budget around those changes every year. And she oversees the organizational programs and helps develop policies. She is currently a member of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, the National Council for Community Behavioral Healthcare, the American Society for Public Administration, the Nebraska Association for Behavioral Health Organizations, the Omaha Community Partnership, Douglas County Mental Health Division Advisory Committee, and Behavioral Oversight Committee. With that, I'd like to introduce and have you welcome Patty Jurjevich this evening.
Thanks so much. I'd first like to thank Senator Cornett for extending the invitation to for me to come and talk with you all. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to talk about the organization, to talk about behavioral health. It's something near and dear to my heart, so I appreciate you all taking time out of your schedules to do that. I'd also like to thank the Clinical Counseling Program for extending this invitation. I think it's important for us to be able to talk about behavioral health, talk about some of the issues that are going on in our state, things that we're wrestling with, to try to serve our residents better. What I'm hoping to do this evening is talk a bit about the region, talk about behavioral health system in general in the state, talk about Region 6 Behavioral Health Care, which is the organization that I work for and that I'm representing tonight, and then also talk a bit about some significant events that have gone on in recent history that relate to behavioral health in the state of Nebraska and how that has played out somewhat in this area of the state. So for a historical perspective, I want to give you some context around how the regional system came to be in this state. It goes back to 1974. The Nebraska unicameral passed a bill called LB 302, and that was the Comprehensive Community Mental Health Services Act. And essentially what this did was it identified mental health funds that were available for services in the community. And when you look at the state of Nebraska, certainly it's quite diverse. It's diverse in terms of its geography and needs of the population. And so the senators that were involved with this legislation in 1974 felt the best way to approach this was to divide the state into regions. And so they were going to group counties together into regions and in that manner be able to address local needs in a better way. Six regions were identified in that original legislation, and we'll take a look at that. 3 years later, then, additional legislation was passed that added substance abuse funding to the state policy. More recent history, LB 1083 from 2004, solidified that regional system and confirmed the authorities of the region
And it also challenged our behavioral health system to look at how we could serve people closer to their home communities. We'd had a bit of an over-reliance on state institutions, these regional centers that had been around for over 100 years. And so the idea was we can serve people better in their local communities. And so that's what that piece of legislation did and required that funding shift around a bit in the state to make that happen. The value that we see in this regional system of care is that there's a greater opportunity for local participation. The governance of how things operate is here at local level, and we have some autonomy. We are not state employees, so we have some discretion as to how things might develop in our local communities to best meet the needs of our citizens. We have the ability to represent and respond to local needs. I like to believe that we can respond fairly quickly in times when responses need in an immediate fashion. We also work really hard at partnerships that we have in our communities, whether it's with consumers, and that's people who receive services, mental health or substance abuse services, service providers, those who local community-based organizations. We also work closely with state agencies and any other care systems that involve behavioral health treatment. This is so that you get a sense as to how these regions look within the state. We've got this map, and so you can see that the six regions laid out here across the state. We've also put up there so you get some idea of the relative size of the regions. You can see there's two of the larger regions in size that have 22 counties in their region, smaller percentage of the population. And in Nebraska, it's interesting because you have urban areas, you have rural areas, and then as you go west, frontier land. And so you have a lot of space that has to be covered with a smaller population. So, as I said, you've got quite a variance there. You've got some regions that have, Region 6 obviously is the smaller one. We'll take a little bit closer look at that. But some of the larger ones with 22 counties, 17 counties, 11 counties. I don't quite know what the thinking was in carving the state up this way, but clearly somebody had, you know, some particular idea in mind in doing that. And what's interesting, too, is these regions and the counties that are within them, this is for the behavioral health system. You will find some difference when you look at children and family system, for example, child welfare and that. They've got the state divided up a bit differently. So in some cases, that gets a bit complicated when you're trying to work with representatives from other systems in the state. Region 6, for example, when you look at the Children and Family Service area, is just Douglas and Sarpy County. And so we potentially are working across three service areas when we're trying to collaborate with other systems of care. So it makes it a little more complicated. But again, there was, you know, apparently some interesting design that somebody had in order to divide the state up this way. So to look at the Region 6 geographic area, we've got five counties. We've got, based on a 2005 census information, a little over 700,000 people in the population, which is about 40% of the state's population. We're the smallest region in terms of size with the five counties, but we have the largest population at 40%. And you can see a breakdown there of the population by county. So I want to talk a little bit about who we are, meaning Region 6 Behavioral Healthcare. Again, that is the organization. And I'm going to probably move in and out of talking about geographic area, which is also called Region 6. The organization name that I work for is Region 6 Behavioral Healthcare. So I'll try to distinguish when I'm talking about those different pieces. Who we are is a quasi-governmental entity. Again, going back to that statute from 1974, the regions were created as a result of state law, essentially. We currently have 61 full-time staff. Our home base is in Omaha. We're down on 38th and Harney. We have our projected revenue for this current fiscal year is a little over $25 million. And our revenue sources primarily are contracts that we have with state agencies. And then part of what the legislation did back in the 70s, and it was reiterated in 2004, was it required that in order to access some of the state money that we have available through contracts, we have to have county matching funds. So each one of those counties that participates in their region has some financial contribution that they need to make. It's their financial investment in the behavioral health system. So a little bit about what we do. Much of it really is set as a result of the law. So statute is going to give us the framework that we work within to serve our community. So specifically what that means is developing and coordinating the public behavioral health system, integrating and coordinating these services within the region, planning for these services. So we're always looking to see what it is that maybe we need to do a bit differently. Maybe it's more of one service, less of another to meet the needs. We have to submit an annual budget and a funding and administration plan to Health and Human Services. We have to submit a variety of other reports as contractually required. We initiate and have contracts with a variety of community-based services, which I'll give you a sense of that a little bit later. And then we also have site reviews that we're required to do, going out and visiting, and it's an audit of sort with our contract agencies. Our organizational structure, again, I'm going to point back to that original, the statutes that govern what we do. It says we will have a governing board. And that governing board will be made up of the counties that are within the region. So again, for Region 6, we've got 5 counties. We've got one county commissioner from each one of those counties that's on our governing board. Also in statute is the requirement that we have a citizen advisory committee. The way we have ours, and there is some difference in terms of how each region can approach that. We have 2 representatives from each of the counties in our region. You can see we've got some vacancies there and are hoping to recruit folks. So I'll put a plug out there. If there's anybody who resides in any of these counties that we've got some vacancies, we'd love to hear from you. We also have a board representative and then a consumer advisory team member. Down at the bottom there, you can see that consumer advisory team. That's one of the newer additions to our organization. We really feel strongly in the value that having input and decision-making from those who are recipients of service. They are the best ones to tell us how we need to deliver services. And so we've added this consumer advisory team to our organization and really are excited about the opportunities to help them become leaders and advocate for system needs in our state. You can also see we've got some departments listed along there. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of those in more detail. Administration really is, you know, what you would expect it to be. It's payroll, it's HR, it's accounting and finance. But then the other pieces of our organization, the Integrated Care Coordination Unit, Network Management, Professional Partner Program, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Probably the bulk of my conversation later will be on network management because it has the most prominent role as in our system in terms of the planning and the statutory responsibilities that we have. I also wanted to share with you our mission, vision, and values. We are pleased to be able to share this. Important things, obviously, effectiveness, efficiency, quality services, both in what we provide to the community directly, as well as in these partnerships and contractual relationships that we have with community-based organizations. Feel strongly about the collaborative efforts and relationships that we've developed over the years with different systems and stakeholders in our system. And then in terms of the value statements, accessible services for when people need to be able to obtain treatment and rehabilitation, wellness and recovery, and again, the involvement of a lot of different individuals in helping us shape this system of behavioral health in our region and in our state. I'm going to talk a little bit about revenue. As I said, and as reflected here again, about $25 million that we have in our organization. You can see a breakdown there between how much is identified for mental health services and how much for substance abuse services. It is truly a complex process in this budgeting world, this public budgeting world. We have, when I look at the budget forms that we have to prepare and submit to the state, there's actually 17 different revenue streams that exist within this $25 million. So it's really a complicated and complex process to track through all the dollars to be accountable for how they're spent. About 94% of all the money that we get in through contracts goes out into consumer-related services. Again, either services that we provide or really the vast majority of it is out in contracts with community-based organizations. Statewide, I want to talk about statewide perspective now. This $25 million is Region 6 behavioral health care. Statewide, when we look at all the regions in their contracts with Health and Human Services, is about $75 million, just to give you a sense of the scope of that. I'm going to talk a little bit now about the Professional Partner Program. And again, this is a program that we operate. And it was developed in 1995, and it really came out of some statewide planning that determined that services for children and their family needed to be delivered a bit differently. And so one of the concepts that came out of that was Professional Partner Program. And we work with kids and their families. These are kids who are having some kind of behavioral or emotional problem. And they're at risk of being removed from the home. So that essentially puts them at risk of getting in that child welfare system or ending up somewhere out of the home. And so we want to get in there and intervene quickly and see what we can do to help to keep that family intact. The responsibility of the professional partner staff is to sit down and work with the family and listen to the family and understand what their needs are and how they would like to resolve whatever it is, the difficulties that are going on. And so every family that we work with, really, there's an opportunity to have a unique plan that they can address. These are families that are voluntarily working with us in order to hopefully help alleviate the problems that are going on. And it's family-driven, strength-based, and we're really pleased with the kinds of outcomes that we've been able to achieve. Last fiscal year, we served 268 youth in this program. And you can see there a sampling of some of the outcomes. 97% of the kids were able to stay in the home that we worked with. 83% had a significant improvement in their functioning. 64% successful discharge. 100% would recommend it to other families, and 100% reported their needs had been met. So we really feel like this concept of serving kids and their families has a lot of value and significance in our system. And this is a program that is in each region within the state. The Integrated Care Coordination Unit, again, another program that we operate, similar in nature to how it is delivered. Working with the family again. The population is different with this one. We're working with state ward youth. So these are kids that are probably already been removed from the home because of, you know, difficulties going on, abuse, neglect, what have you. This project, we work collaboratively with Health and Human Services on the child welfare side, as well as Nebraska Family Support Network, which is a family organization that helps these families navigate through this complex system. State Ward Youth, as I mentioned, we're generally getting these kids and families out of the traditional child welfare unit. It's smaller caseloads. We feel like there's a benefit in being able to reduce that caseload that staff are working with, and to allow them to work with these families in a much more intensive way. One of the unique things too about this program, the identified kids that we worked with, there were 377 kids in FY09. But I think what's really nice about this program is we don't stop there. If we have an opportunity to work with siblings, whether they're state ward siblings, if they're state wards or not, we have an opportunity to work with the entire family, all the siblings, in order to help achieve the permanency, where these kids were going to be on a permanent basis, also looking at their safety and well-being. I talk about this program. I do, though, need to say that this program is being phased out. We're obviously really pleased with the kind of outcomes that we've achieved in this program over the years, but in the child welfare reform that's going on right now, and I have no idea what the awareness is that you have of that, but this function, this intensive case management or service coordination, will be shifting in the very near future to the organizations that have lead role in taking on working with state ward youth. So we're sad to see it go, but we felt like we've given it a good effort over the years. The other area, kind of the other department within our organization, is network management. As I said earlier, this really is where the bulk of the dollars that come into our organization go into network management. And they really do, they're passing through and they're going out to community-based organizations that provide the service to our community. The roles and responsibilities, again, are tied back to statute and law. Planning, organizing, monitoring, and evaluating services that we have through contracts. We're always looking to assess the needs and gaps and barriers. Advocating for system improvement, and that really comes through in a variety of different ways. It may be advocating for folks on an individual level. It may be advocating for our contract agencies to try to overcome a barrier that they have with some system things. It may be advocating with state agencies for some changes that we feel need to be made, advocating with our legislature, hoping to access additional funding. So it really is, it just occurs in a variety of different ways. Local participation, again, local autonomy. I think, again, that's just a huge value when you look at how we can govern and manage things here locally, as opposed to decision-making perhaps coming out of Lincoln and being directed out of a state agency. We do a lot of technical assistance and consultation. We take phone calls from the general public who have questions about accessing services. We work with our network of providers, associations, advocacy groups. It's really whoever gives us a call, we're happy to see how we can help. And we're that last one, the process and outcome standards, this is a process that is a bit newer for us, but we're really excited about an opportunity to be able to collect outcome measures for the services that are provided in our community, focusing on effectiveness, efficiency, satisfaction, and access. It certainly is the question that when we go talk with state senators, the question is, how do I know that this is a good use of the dollars? And so we've got to be able to move our system in a direction that gives us the data and the answers to those questions. And so we're pleased. It's been a bit of a slow process, but it is very collaborative. It isn't just, our staff sitting in an office making these decisions. It's pulling people in that provide the service and say, let's figure this out together, how we can demonstrate that it's quality services that are being delivered in this region. We have within that network management some specialized functions that look at particular pieces of the behavioral health system. The emergency system, which for the behavioral health system really means how do you access services when there's a crisis, whether that's an acute bed at a local hospital, whether it's a mobile crisis response, trying to potentially divert that admission to a hospital, and a variety of other services that hopefully are addressing the urgent needs of our citizens. Consumer affairs, obviously, again, looking for that important input and decision-making role from those individuals who are recipient of services. The youth system, focusing on all the different systems in our state that work with kids, which it is very complex, and we'll talk a bit about that later. Prevention, youth prevention activities, and transition services really relates to folks that are coming out of the regional center and working for a smooth transition back into the community. We currently contract with 19 service organizations to provide treatment, rehab, and prevention. And I've got a list later on. We can look at that. But it really is, it's an amazing array of services and community-based organizations that we work with. Quite diverse in terms of size, you know, small halfway houses compared to very large not-for-profit organizations. And through this network of organizations, there's 35 levels of care, 67 different programs, at 131 sites. And this is just Region 6. Last fiscal year, over 18,000 people were served. I think that's pretty amazing. I don't know that most folks would have expected that the number would have been quite that large. And so you can see just a few pieces of information about those 18,000 people. 79% had an annual income of less than $10,000. 25% had substance use, abuse disorders, 48% serious mental illness, 83%, so the vast majority were between the ages of 19 and 49. And then you see a split in terms of the Caucasian racial ethnic minorities. I think one of the important things to know, too, and I should have said this earlier, the dollars that we're talking about, the $75 million statewide, $25 million in this public behavioral health system, is for those people that have no other means to pay for services. So it's that safety net that is available for folks that don't have private health insurance, don't have Medicaid, or any other way to pay for services. This is how behavioral health services are made available to our citizens. Some highlights then from the network. There was 90% of those that were coming out of local acute stays at hospitals were able to go back and stay in the community as opposed to going to a regional center. We got a grant through the Nebraska Planning Council on Developmental Disabilities to try to collaborate better between systems, behavioral health and developmental disabilities. What we find, and it's not unusual, is that people's needs are very complex. Generally, it's not just a behavioral health issue. There's oftentimes something else that's going on with that individual, and it makes it really difficult with these complex needs that may be addressed in a variety of different systems in this state to get everybody on the same page working towards the right kinds of treatment for people. We've got housing opportunities to help make housing affordable, safe and affordable housing for folks. New this year was a transitional resources for youth consultation team. What we've discovered is that when youth that have behavioral health needs, as they begin to get towards that age of 19, they may need some assistance getting from that youth service delivery system to the adult service delivery system. It is not an easy journey. Very different systems. And so we've got a team of folks that are helping to bridge that. And then we had an opportunity to do some planning around some dollars that we had available. Some were one-time dollars, non-sustainable, and then there was another pot that were sustainable. I'm going to probably spend a little bit of time now talking about some of the more significant events in recent history with behavioral health services and the system in the state. I mentioned earlier LB 1083, that was from 2004, and for me it was probably one of the most significant pieces of legislation, probably other than what founded the regions, that we've had an opportunity to work with. And it was primarily focused on adults in our state, and it really was about, again, serving people closer to home, feeling like there's a better opportunity for that quality of life if you can be closer to family and friends as opposed to potentially hundreds of miles away in an institution receiving your care. And so it was about really kind of flipping this system on its ear and challenging lots of us to think about how we could do things differently. As a result of this legislation, the Region 6 got about $8 million more to achieve that. So it was about closing regional center beds, shifting dollars to the regions so that new and different services could be built, so that people could be served locally. So in that process, about $30 million transferred from the state regional center operations to local communities and to the regions for planning. It was a process that was a bit painful when we were in the midst of it. It started, we got directives probably in January, and by March we had to turn around and supply a plan to the state on how we were going to achieve this. How are we going to serve people differently in this state? And the original direction from the state was, you know, figure out what you need in the community so that people who are currently in the regional center can come back to their home communities. And we looked at that, and yes, that made some sense, but we couldn't figure out that if people were still going into the regional center, how are we ever going to reduce regional center beds? It just didn't make sense to us. So we took a two-pronged approach. We said we're certainly going to work at getting folks transitioned out of the regional center back to our community, but we're also going to work on that front end, and we're going to have to develop services so that people don't have to go to the regional center at all. And we did planning in our community. We involved probably hundreds of people that had an interest in participating in this and helping to figure out what the solutions were. And so we came up with a plan. Unfortunately, it had a price tag of about, I think, $24 million. Well, we got about $6 million at that time. So right off the bat, our challenge was how we were going to achieve what we had hoped to achieve with a heck of a lot less money. But we did. Again, it's that collaborative effort. It's about bringing people in and getting the best ideas you can on how we're going to achieve it. We don't have enough money in this behavioral health system to do everything we need. We're getting pretty used to that. And so there's difficult decisions that have to be made about where the funding goes and what's the right balance of services so that you can try to achieve most needs. But quite frankly, it's with the dollars that we have available to us, we're not going to be able to meet everybody's needs. So really tough decisions that we have to face. That process started in 2004. We also, in addition to creating services, also looked for process kinds of changes that could be made at this local level to help make sure that we're successful and that people who are staying in the community or coming back to the community have got really quality services and quality plans wrapped around them. We created what's called a clinical review team. And essentially what it is a group of dedicated people that come together every week and look at case information for folks, look at the individual's wishes and needs, and help put together plans that are hopefully going to help that person be successful in their community living situation. And I think that has made a huge difference in terms of the collaboration and the kinds of quality planning that can be done on that individual level for folks accessing services. So it really is significant in our history in terms of what we were able to achieve. Again, it was limited to adults, and we're not finished. I think we often hear the state meaning Health and Human Services, since all the money that was available through this process has been distributed, they'll talk about it being done, but we don't see it being done. I think maybe we've kind of finished up a chapter of it, but I don't think we can ever say we're completely done in trying to transform systems. I think we need to continue to challenge ourselves on how we can do the best job that we can with the limited financial resources that we have. I did, though, want to point out, I'm just going to work off of another set of information I have here, but I think it really does summarize very nicely the kind of accomplishments that took place because of behavioral health reform with adults. And this comes from a presentation that Scott Adams, who's the director of the Behavioral Health Division, gave, and these are statewide numbers. So, but as a result of behavioral health reform and the new services that were developed in all the regions across the state, 9,000 new consumers were served closer to home. 251 regional center beds were closed. Significant increase in admissions. There was, when they look at a readmission rate, so one of the things they wanted to know was if people are coming out of the regional center, are they just going back in? Are they going to recycle back in? But according to the study that was done, 7.9% was the readmission rate, 7.9% back to the regional center. Nationally, there's a 19.9%. So we were well under what national averages are for readmission rate to regional centers. As I mentioned, about $30 million in dollars came out of the state system to the community-based system. And then also part of, you know, looking at different ways of serving people in our community, there was $25 million in private sector dollars. And Rhonda Hawks, I think, was here for the last session, and she probably talked in great detail about that effort. And you know, obviously we are benefiting in our local community with the development of Lasting Hope Recovery Center, and that was made possible through very generous private donors who have an interest in seeing that behavioral health services have funding. So we're very appreciative of that. So, you know, again, I think that it was the right thing to do, behavioral health reform. I'm not going to lie, there was a great deal of tension that existed in our behavioral health system because of this. Certainly, anytime you're talking about dollars being taken from someone to give to someone else, that's going to create some tension. And so from the regional center and state perspective, even though you may agree that serving people closer to home is the right thing to do, it was a tough decision for them. It meant jobs. It was, you know, it made a difference in those local economies, in those cities that had regional centers. So it was tense at times trying to first get the legislation through, and then secondly to actually implement what we needed to do based on the intent of the legislation. So it's not finished. We're continuing to work on it, but we've made significant progress in serving adults differently in the state. The other thing that's much more recent is LB 603, Children and Family Behavioral Health Support Act. No doubt you remember the safe haven situation and kids getting dropped off in local hospitals. I think that many will say that it was really quite an embarrassment for this state to have that situation take place. But I think it also raised issues about the behavioral health needs of kids in this state and the difficulty that families experience in trying to access those services. So we fortunately had leadership in the state that wanted to take a look at how to address that. State senators invited people to come, people meaning providers, funders, parents, kids, listening to everybody. You know, what is going on in this system that people are needing to relinquish custody of their kids? And so there certainly was then the interest based on what folks were saying was to do something in the legislature. And so the result, there was a number of different bills. This LB 603 that was passed really was, there were a number of bills that came together to support kids and their families. Kids Connection was the eligibility for Kids Connection health insurance to help support access payment for services. That was expanded. There is a statewide helpline and family navigator piece to that. Just recently that grant has been awarded. And so that should fulfill a place in the system to be able for parents to be able to call to get some resource information to access behavioral health or other kinds of needs. And then the family navigator piece is going to the potential to link up and help folks, kind of help them walk through the system to access services. Also along with that, there was funding for behavioral health services to the regions. And so we, Region 6, there was $1.5 million statewide, and that's for about a year and a half. So we are getting about $200,000 for this partial year and then about $400,000 for the following fiscal year. And so we're pleased to be able to do that. Is it as much as we had hoped to get? Absolutely not. You know, we had obviously hoped that we could get much more. We are concerned that when people call the helpline, where will they be referred? Will there be enough services out there and access to them? We're concerned about that. But the economic times are the way they are. And so we were fortunate to be able to get these dollars. And senators promised us that this is a first start. It's not done. And I'm certain that we'll be continuously reminding them of those comments. There's also, within that LB 603, workforce development. One of the big challenges that we face in the behavioral health system is enough people to fill jobs. So this legislation, again, just kind of a starting point, but is going to help create some training opportunities for psychiatrists. You know, obviously we had hoped that there would be other professions that could be included in that so that more and different levels of professions could help grow that. But it's a problem. You know, anytime we look at developing new programs or expanding programs, The workforce is just, it's just not there. It is important that we continue to look to our local institutions of higher learning and say, help us. Help us develop these professionals that we need as a workforce to serve our community. So it certainly is something that resonated in our legislature, and so we're pleased to be able to get a first start on that, but it is by no means done on that front either. There's also an oversight commission that's associated with LB 603, so that is made up of state senators, and so we're pleased that there will be a group that will be able to monitor how all of these pieces of LB 603 roll out, and is it going to get the results that we hope that it will in order to address those safe haven type situations. So when we look towards the future for Region 6, certainly these are a number of things that we're considering. First on the list, children, youth, and their families. It is, since 2004, we spent a lot of our resources, people, and energies looking at the adult system because of LB 1083 and the reform that was required. Now that that is somewhat stabilized, it really is time for us to try to look at this children and youth and their family behavioral health piece of our system. There's a lot going on there right now. There's the child welfare reform that hasn't gone 100% live yet, but we're not quite sure how that's going to impact our system. And that really is, to probably overgeneralize, but it is essentially the state privatizing some of the activities that they had done and that they had direct responsibility for now will be the responsibility of agencies across the state. So in this area, there's three agencies that are going to have that responsibility. They have an opportunity with that to maybe do things differently, but we're uncertain how that's all going to look in the next few months. The 603 services, the helpline, the family navigator, we're not certain what kind of impact that's going to have. What we do know is there's a lot of systems that work with kids. And most of our dollars that we have in our budget go to adults. So dollar-wise, we're not funding a lot of kids' services, but we still have an interest in trying to help integrate. So it shouldn't matter whether services for a youth are funded by private insurance, Medicaid, child welfare, or Region 6. We need to figure out how to integrate those systems so that it looks pretty seamless and transparent for those families that are trying to access care. Special populations, we have a need to look at how services are available to ethnic minority groups, geriatric, our older citizens. Haven't put a lot of attention around that. The dual disorder, developmentally disabled and behavioral health. Nursing facilities, there's individuals with behavioral health issues that reside in nursing facilities. And those facilities sometimes struggle in how to best meet the needs of those individuals. So we need to figure out how to support them so that that's a successful placement. Crisis prevention and early intervention, education. Again, looking at what I refer to as the front end of our system, what do we need that's going to help people be stable and perhaps not have to go into the hospital? And I'm not sure we've put enough effort into that. We've kind of looked downstream a little bit once they come out of the hospital and wrapping supports and services around them. But we're to the point now where I think we need to look at at the utilization of our acute services, which are most expensive, most intensive services, and say, are there some things that we can do in our community to help prevent people from going into the hospital? Prevention kinds of things. We are developing mobile crisis response. We've got this in a couple counties in our region already, but we're now, think we're ready to dive into Douglas County, which is got the most volume in terms of emergency protective custody situations that occur and hospitalizations. But essentially what this is that when law enforcement is called to the scene and it appears that it's a mental health crisis, they have an opportunity to call for a professional, a licensed mental health professional, to come out and assess what's going on and help that law enforcement officer determine if an EPC is necessary, or maybe there's some other resources that the individual can be referred to and get access to fairly quickly and hopefully stave off that emergency situation, an emergency protective custody situation, which can be quite traumatic for individuals. Crisis intervention training, that is training that is provided to law enforcement to help them be better aware and better understand what they're going to experience when they get calls out to a home when there's potentially a mental health crisis going on. Peer services, again, you know, the opportunity to train those who are consumers of services in being able to support their peers. And this can look a lot of different ways. We have peer support services that we're putting some money into right now, but I think we need to do more of it. The research is clear that in peers helping peers has just got amazing value in terms of recovery. And then still looking at our reliance on the regional center and what role it fulfills in our system. It appears that our access to regional center beds may continue to shrink. And so if that is not available to us, how will we serve people in the community? On the quality improvement side, we're currently partnering with UNO, service learning opportunities. They have students who work with our contract agencies to do evaluations. We're working on systems goals and expectations, and then the standardized outcome measures process. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm hopeful that by coming and talking here, there's an opportunity for some collaboration that the region can have with Bellevue University as well. I just think that there's hopefully something that we can do along those lines as well. The last one, it probably looks like I stuttered there, but I meant that intentionally. I did want to touch on the public-private partnerships, but I think there's also an opportunity for the public system to better collaborate and to better partner. We still have silos somewhat in the system where there's a developmental disabilities and behavioral health, and sometimes we don't work real well together at any level of the system, whether it's at the state or the region or community. So I think that there's expectations that we can place upon ourselves about being able to work in a more collaborative way to better meet people's needs. And then the public-private partnerships, I mentioned earlier the dollars that were raised in our local community to develop Lasting Hope Recovery Center. I mean, that was just an enormous thing that occurred. I don't think there's been anything even like it elsewhere in the state. I'm certain there hasn't. So it's necessary for these partnerships to help address this fragmentation and potential duplication that we have going on as it relates to behavioral health. I also think that with limited dollars, it's really the only way that you're going to maximize scarce resources is figuring out how to collaborate. And then I think it also promotes creative thinking. Certainly when you bring people together at a table that come from very different perspectives, I think you have an opportunity to really come out on the other side with some innovative ways of addressing problems that exist. I think the only thing that I caution about these partnerships, whether it's public-private or even within the public system, is that you potentially have different cultures coming together. And it was really interesting when working on the Lasting Hope Recovery Center, is the private sector not really fully understanding how the public sector works. I've got rules and regulations and contracts and bureaucracy, and it's sometimes a slow-moving train. And so it was, I'm not going to say a culture clash, but I think anytime you're going to work with either different systems or different partners, you've got the potential for different terminology and just very different perspectives on how things, how that process should work. And so hopefully when you have an opportunity for these kinds of collaborative partnerships, think about that when you're heading into it. I think, you know, we were on the backside, and it was just an interesting to observe how different folks come at. I think we all wanted the same thing in the end, but how we got there, each group looked at a bit differently. And that's it.
You've been listening to a program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Patricia Jurjevich, Regional Program Administrator of Region 6 Behavioral Health Care. Her topic was History, Purpose, Structure, and Recent Developments in the Publicly Funded Behavioral Health System in Region 6. Ms. Jurjevich's talk was given as Part 2 of the Behavioral Health Advocacy and the Importance of Public-Private Partnerships Speaker Series, which is presented by the Bellevue University Graduate Clinical Counseling Programs. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday evening, October 1st, 2009, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Jim Maxwell, Assistant Director of Public Relations at Bellevue University, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.